Hello, I'm Eric Huang. You're listening to Saint Podcast, a podcast about the always fascinating and often controversial lives of the saints. This is a history and culture podcast that traces the origins of morality tales of the saints, or hagiographies, through queer and feminist stories, ancient legends and lore, art history, and pop culture. This is a special episode inspired by an exhibition at the National Gallery in London entitled St. Francis of Assisi, and features a very special guest, co-curator of the exhibition, Dr. Joost Joustra. Presenting the art and imagery of St. Francis from the 13th century to today, the exhibition investigates why this saint is a figure of enormous relevance to our time due to his spiritual radicalism, commitment to the poor, and love of God and nature, as well as powerful appeals for peace and openness to dialogue with other religions. It's an incredible exhibition that explores the life of an enormously popular saint through some of the earliest medieval depictions, manuscripts written in Francis's own hand, modern-day films, and even a Marvel comic book. The Art of St. Francis is a special Saint Podcast episode that explores the way art has shaped our understanding of the Poverello from Assisi. We've covered the legend of St. Francis in a two-part episode, St. Francis, the Wayward Stigmatic. And we've talked about him in the latest Mystics episode, St. Clare, the Mighty Abbess in the Shadows. What we've yet to explore is the tremendous wealth of artwork that the story of the Poverello has inspired through the centuries. He's perhaps the most depicted saint in art forms of all kinds, rivaling Mary Magdalene, John the Baptist, Saint Sebastian, and the Apostles. Last month, I had a chat with Joost Joustra at the National Gallery in London. Here he is to introduce himself and tell us about his involvement with the St. Francis exhibition.
My name is Joost Joustra, and I'm the Amundsen Research Associate Curator in Art and Religion at the National Gallery. Most of the curators we have at the National Gallery work on one specific time period or school. I'm quite lucky in that I get to work across the collection on any painting that could be considered a religious work of art. So that makes it quite broad. A lot of our collection is explicitly religious, but you could draw that out. I mean, you could look at landscape painting and consider it from a religious point of view. So one day I'm working on 12th century painting, and the next day I'm working with a living artist. Quite lucky.
The exhibition is near the National Gallery's cafe. The entrance is along a wall decorated with greenery that evokes the opening to a hedge maze Alice might have seen in Wonderland. I walked in behind a group of Italian Franciscans who were also invited to the press opening. The first room is darkly lit, serene. London is a world away. With the presence of the friars and the peaceful atmosphere, crossing over the threshold felt like a sacred religious rite. It was as if we were all at Porticuncula, where Francis founded the Friars Minor. I asked Joost why the National Gallery decided to create an exhibition around St. Francis. Certainly saints like Mary Magdalene and John the Baptist are more popular, and Catholic figures like the Virgin Mary and Christ have a much larger body of work devoted to them.
You would think that. Well, we did an exhibition in 2000, so that's before my time, with Neil McGregor and then a curator, Gabriele Finaldi, now director and my co-curator of this exhibition, did an exhibition called Seeing Salvation, which was on the image of Christ. So from there, we've had a strong tradition of working on religious subjects in exhibitions, but also digital projects, research projects. And ultimately, Gabrielli and another curator who was working here at the time, in about 2015-16, started thinking about what could be another exhibition like the Seeing Salvation exhibition, and what sacred holy figure would you arrive at thinking about that. And it was St. Francis. And thinking about that. I started here in 2018, so I came later on this project. It makes sense to do an exhibition on Christ and then do an exhibition on someone who's been considered an alter Christus or another Christ. So St. Francis became the figure that we wanted to explore through works of art. If you walk around the National Gallery, I mean, the Sainsbury Wing is closed currently, but if you would walk around the Sainsbury Wing and you start counting Francis's, there's many. He's not that far off from Christ or John the Baptist or Mary Magdalene. So Francis became quite organically the subject of this exhibition.
The legend of St. Francis continues to inspire artists to this day. The Pavarello's teachings on kindness, a respect for the natural world, and a rejection of materialism are perhaps even more relevant now than they were in the 13th century when Francis was alive. The National Gallery exhibition is organized into 7 rooms that address these themes.
It's a 7-room exhibition. Part of that tells quite a more traditional art historical narrative. So there's a room with the earliest objects associated with St. Francis that has 13th century panel paintings and manuscripts in it. There's also a room that has Baroque painting. So if you step into that room, it feels very much like the traditional National Gallery exhibition. On the other hand, we are also working more thematically in this exhibition. So there's a room dedicated to St. Francis and nature, for instance, his relationship with the natural world. And in that, you'll find 15th century paintings, but also something made only a few years ago. So there's a whole range of objects in that room. Depending on the room you're in, it's either slightly more located within a time or place, but sometimes it explores certain themes that we associate with Francis. A large section of the exhibition we've actually called Radical Francis, because he had quite a radical personality, and the way he's been interpreted has been quite radical.
We explored St. Francis's radical teachings in previous episodes. The exhibited objects that investigate this side of the Pavarello are in room 6, but let's start at the beginning. The first room, after entering the Wall of Greenery, introduces the saint with a display that hangs a 17th century Surbaran painting alongside contemporary pieces, including Antony Gormley's abstracted sculpture, Untitled for Francis. The juxtaposition makes it clear this exhibition won't just be a straightforward narrative. Indeed, the rest of the rooms paint a thematic hagiography through the eyes of the artists whose work is on display. Room 2 features a series of paintings by Sassetta, created about 200 years after Francis's death. The panels were commissioned for the Church of St. Francis in Borgo San Sepolcro and formed a massive double-sided altarpiece. Each individual scene features highlights from Francis's life, as told by the most popular hagiographies, the ones written by Thomas of Celano and St. Bonaventure. Through the centuries, the altarpiece has been broken apart, its component pieces scattered around the world. 9 are reunited in London at the exhibition. The painting of Lady Poverty we discussed in the St. Francis Mystics episode is here, as is the panel that shows Francis disrobing as he rejects his earthly father. Even older are the paintings in Room 3, created in the decades following Francis's death. 2 artworks on display are in the Byzantine style, in which a large central figure of St. Francis stands rather stiffly, flanked by miniature tableaus which detail key dramatic moments in the Pavarello's life. One of the works shows 4 posthumous miracles in which Francis heals several people: a young girl with a twisted neck, a disabled man, and a person suffering from leprosy. The exorcism of a woman possessed by a demon is the 4th miracle illustrated. These are all events we covered in more detail in the previous St. Francis episodes. The Byzantine style might appear unnatural to a contemporary viewer, very stylized. Here's Joost to tell us how the Byzantine style evolved into the narrative paintings that are far more familiar to audiences today.
In the icon painting tradition, the depiction of a saint looking out frontally is quite a traditional way of depiction. But in a type of painting especially associated with St. Francis is the Vita Retable. It shows you Francis standing frontally, often showing his wounds, holding a book or something like that. But then flanking that, you'll start finding narrative episodes from his life. The earliest panels have a strong emphasis on miracles, but more and more it's actually the episodes from his life that take over. And it's these episodes that take over the imagination of artists as well. And ultimately the iconic frontal depiction and the miracle episode disappears a little bit, and it all becomes about his life. And it's about telling those episodes from his life through painting.
The Vita Retables, mentioned by Joost, are narrative altarpieces created in the Byzantine style. These are the paintings that feature a main image of a saint, flanked by scenes from their life. They look a bit like comic books.
It's interesting that you say that these early paintings almost are like comic books. Because one object we do have in the exhibition is a Marvel comic book called Francis, Brother of the Universe, which was published by Marvel Comics in 1980, and actually brings that old tradition of narrative episodes into something that is a lot more familiar to most people, and indeed a comic book on the life of St. Francis. It makes sense, right, when you start thinking about them like that. And St. Francis would be a good one. For instance, if you look at the page where Francis receives the stigmata, it become these flashing things emanating from the wounds of Christ. And it really feels like you're looking at a panel from Superman or Spider-Man or X-Men or something like that.
Images of my copy of the comic book are on the Saint Podcast website, as are many of the artworks discussed in this episode. Head to www.saintpodcast.com. Saint is spelled out, S-A-I-N-T. Some of the most celebrated narrative paintings of St. Francis are attributed to the Italian painter Giotto. These are frescoes painted onto the walls of the St. Francis Church in Assisi between 1297 and the year 1300. They can't be moved without cutting down the walls, so they aren't in the exhibition. If you have the chance to visit Assisi, make time for this church, where these masterpieces can be viewed in the upper basilica. Giotto is credited for being one of the artists responsible for the Renaissance. He was one of the first to return to a more natural depiction of forms, a style that strove for accurate reproductions from life, rather than the stylized and formal Byzantine style that was so popular at the time. And it's Giotto's narrative depictions of the life of St. Francis that exemplified this new way of making art. And so the simple Poverello from Assisi was arguably one of the inspirations behind the Renaissance. This all said, there's still an ongoing debate as to whether or not Giotto is indeed the artist behind these beautiful frescoes. Here's Joost to tell us more.
A lot of the debates about these frescoes in the Basilica and the Upper Church actually go back to attribution. So people are endlessly talking about, are these actually by Giotto? Are they by Giotto in his workshop? Are they by just his workshop? Followers of Giotto? But I don't think that's the point. I think the point is that series of fresco paintings there ultimately became as influential as the written biography by Bonaventure, for instance. And it became one of the foundational texts, if you can call it that, for the Franciscan legend. And that's really extraordinary that paintings can do that.
Giotto's paintings of Francis changed the way saints' stories were depicted in art. The paintings themselves also changed the story of St. Francis by adding a visual element absent in the popular hagiographies. These visuals imprinted on the imaginations of a largely illiterate population, providing an archetype and template of what St. Francis looked like, how he dressed, what his home and environment were like. The choices artists like Giotto made when visually depicting scenes from a saint's life would be repeated and reinterpreted by generations of artists for centuries. Subtle, and sometimes not so subtle, changes to the saint's story, such as posthumous miracles and local folk tales, would later find themselves enshrined into written biographies that would become the official version of the saint's legend. The National Gallery exhibition also includes paintings of St. Clair, Francis's protege, whom we covered in the latest Mystics episode, St. Clair, the Mighty Abbess in the Shadows. Yost tells us why paintings of Clair are included in the exhibition.
We thought, who is France's most iconic or most famous follower? And that would be Clair. I mean, I could think of Brother Leo as well, who was there when he received the stigmata. But I think it's Clair that really most spoke to artistic imagination as well. That a figure that developed a strong iconography of her own. But there were always these parallels made between the iconography of Francis and the iconography of Clair. And you'll see that in the exhibition, for instance. The episode with St. Francis and the wolf in Gubbio is quite a famous episode from his life, and an iconography that has always very explicitly spoken to artists, because it's great to paint Francis shaking the paw of a wolf. But then you'll notice that in the iconography of Clair, you'll also find a miracle with a wolf. So these things exist in parallel. And I think it's about creating that kinship, creating that visual kinship.
It was a common literary practice in the hagiography genre to link two sacred figures by altering their stories to be more similar, including adding brand new narratives. As we discussed in the St. Francis episodes, many hagiographers altered the details of Francis's life to make him more like Christ, the Alta Christus, or another Christ that Yost mentioned earlier. Clair's posthumous battle with a wolf, invented to link her more closely with Francis's wolf encounter, is illustrated by a piece on display at the exhibition. The painting is by Giovanni di Paolo, created in the 15th century. It's not just old masters who have been inspired by St. Francis to create new art. Yost tells us his thoughts on why creators through time have always been drawn to the Poverello.
People often see artists themselves as slightly radical figures, or people that exist slightly outside normal society. And I think it makes perfect sense to draw that line between Francis and artists. I think he's ultimately a figure who embodies a certain spirit that seems very close to who we consider artists are. So I think it makes sense that through time, from, let's say, 1228 onwards, you'll find artists who have looked at Francis, not just in the 13th, 14th, and 15th century, but still in the current moment. People say often about Francis, he's a saint that seems to really speak to our contemporary debates or worries or things that are part of politics. But at the same time, it seems like that was always the case, that Francis has this continuous appeal through time. And that makes him such an interesting figure to explore through works of art from all centuries.
St. Francis's teachings are indeed timeless. One modern artist inspired by this saint is Alberto Burri.
We have a work of art by an Italian 20th century artist called Alberto Burri, who is always seen as maybe the founding father of a movement called Arte Povera, although he was never explicitly part of that movement. It's an idea of poor art. It's an idea of using very simple materials and a sublimation of these simple materials, lifting them up to make something more special out of them. And that feels very Franciscan. The materials he uses, like burlap sacks, when you see them, they immediately make you think about the habit of St. Francis. And it is perhaps no surprise that Burri himself was from Città di Castello, a town only a few miles from Assisi, ultimately. So he grew up surrounded by this Franciscan tradition. And although Burri never explicitly said, "This is my inspiration for the work I'm doing," there's many different stories that tell you about that. There's this strong connection, this visual connection between the work of Burri and the idea of Francis and the idea of poverty and poor materials.
The work Yost refers to is called sacco, or sack in English. It's a burlap sackcloth that's been ripped, holes cut into it. The canvas under one of the holes is painted bright red. The opening is evocative of a large bullet wound, and also of the stigmata Francis had on his side, the one that mirrors Christ's side wound created by a Roman soldier's spear. Burri's sacco is close to another object, a very special one.
We are borrowing a relic, a very extraordinary object, one of the habits that is believed to have been worn by St. Francis himself, coming from Santa Croce in Florence. It's an object that has never really left that church since it's been there. Seeing that habit, which is a very sacred object, and that modernist work by Burri in the same space, almost activates both of these objects on a new level. I think that's very exciting.
The proximity of Burri's piece and the relic of St. Francis's habit ties them together in a powerful way. It somehow makes the person of Francis very present. It's as if he's just been to the exhibition and left behind two of his tunics. Just beyond these two objects in room 4 are Baroque-era paintings of St. Francis, paintings created during the Counter-Reformation. This was a tumultuous time during which numerous communities and nations rejected the church in Rome to form Protestant movements in protest to the corruption that had consumed the papacy. What would become the Catholic Church enacted many decrees to maintain control and address some of the valid criticisms. Artworks of saints had become increasingly sensual since the Renaissance, with a proliferation of exposed muscular bodies and breasts in sacred paintings, even in those of Christ and the Virgin Mary. Overtly carnal depictions were reined in, narrative art highlighting magical miracles and anecdotes and hagiographies that were more like fairy tales or pagan legends were now prohibited. The rules forced artists to adopt a new visual vocabulary to usher in a new style. Here's Joost to tell us how artworks of St. Francis were affected.
Of course, these things are never absolute, but in a more general sense, you could say that the Counter-Reformation Francis that appears takes him outside of that narrative moment, outside of time, not looking explicitly at his biography, not depicting like this is the moment Francis renounces his father, or Francis meets the Wolf of Gubbio, or Francis is preaching to the birds, but conflating these iconographies, emphasizing that spiritual connection that exists between Francis and Christ, and creating more mystical depictions of Francis.
My favorite piece in the exhibition is a painting from this time period, affected by the Counter-Reformation rules, whilst pushing the boundaries of what was acceptable at the same time. It's by Caravaggio, and it's one of Joost's favorites as well.
We have a very exciting Caravaggio coming from the Wadsworth Athenaeum in Connecticut. It's a painting that is quite iconic, famous, it's often reproduced, but not many people, especially in this country, will have seen that painting. It shows this very intimate moment between Francis and an angel who seems to be consoling him just after he's received a stigmata. It's a unique iconography, and it really shows a moment in Francis' life that is not often depicted. Caravaggio was a master at that, at finding these unique moments, so it makes sense that it was him who painted that.
There's so much emotion in the Caravaggio painting, as is typical of the artist's work, and generally of art from the Baroque era. Francis is comforted by an angel, cradled in the winged being's lap, as the ecstasy of the stigmata, a potent mix of pain and pleasure, consumes the Poverello. Presumably, this is the same angel that gave Francis his stigmata just moments earlier, although Caravaggio has chosen to paint a classical angel, an Eros-like figure, rather than the six-winged seraph from Brother Leo's first-hand account. It's quite a different depiction of a pivotal moment, one in which the artist emphasizes the mysticism and emotion of the event, instead of its narrative details. Another St. Francis painting by Caravaggio used to hang at the Oratory of St. Lawrence in Palermo, Sicily. This Caravaggio isn't in the exhibition at the National Gallery. In 1969, it was stolen. Tucked away in a side street off the busy Via Vittorio Emanuele in Palermo is the Oratory of St. Lawrence. It's a small church adjacent to the much larger Basilica of St. Francis, which is associated with the first arrival of the Franciscans in Sicily in 1224. Centuries later, on the night of October 17, 1969, a group of maybe two or three men crept into the Oratory of St. Lawrence. Guarded only by an elderly janitor, they easily slipped by undetected to access the high altar, above which hung a priceless St. Francis Nativity painting by Caravaggio. One of the men brandished a knife, which he used to cut the painting from its frame, while the other gathered a carpet from the floor and rolled up the cutout painting inside it. With the artwork in hand, the men disappeared into the night. The Caravaggio the art thief stole draws from St. Francis's hagiography, a story that credits the Poverello for inventing the Christmas nativity scene, or creche. According to numerous hagiographical sources, as Christmas 1223 approaches, St. Francis is inspired by God to commemorate the holy day in a special way. Francis is in Greccio, Italy, where he's been preaching and tending to the town's sick and poor. A man named John, whom Thomas of Celano tells us, Francis loved with, quote, special affection, since despite being a noble in the land and very honored in human society, he had trampled the nobility of the flesh under his feet, and pursued instead the nobility of the spirit. Even though John is an aristocrat, he's a good person, someone Francis admires for his piety. And as a wealthy nobleman, John is able to help Francis procure items he needs to execute the divinely inspired Christmas celebration. A life-sized, living recreation of the birth of Christ, complete with manger and livestock. Hagiographer Julian of Spire describes what happens next. Finally, the holy night arrived. Blessed Francis was there with many of his brothers gathered around him. The hay in the manger is prepared. The ox and the ass are arranged around the manger. And the vigil celebration begins with joy. A great multitude of people stream together from various places. The night is filled with an unaccustomed joy and made luminous by candles and torches. And so, with a new ritual, the festival of a new Bethlehem is celebrated. Presumably, actors or willing townsfolk are engaged to stand in for the Virgin Mary, Joseph, and the shepherds. For the figure of a newborn Christ, however, Francis has other plans. According to Saint Bonaventure, the Poverello carves the likeness of a baby from a piece of wood. An eyewitness describes how the sculpture comes to life and cries tears of joy. Bonaventure writes that the doll, quote, awakened from sleep when the Blessed Father Francis embraced him in both arms. So the Christmas tradition of creating nativity scenes, be they grand theatrical productions, or at-home displays of paper dolls, was started by St. Francis. It's this association between Francis and Christmas nativity scenes that's referenced in the still-lost Caravaggio. The work is a typically dark-lit scene that draws the eye to a brightly painted baby Jesus at the bottom center. The light in the composition emanates from the child. St. Lawrence, the patron of the church in which the painting was hung, is on the left, holding the grill he was roasted on. He looks down adoringly at the newborn, while the Virgin Mary sits behind her son, looking exhausted and disheveled. It's a very human and realistic depiction of the Mother of God that shocked contemporaries. A shepherd on the bottom right in the foreground draws in the eye, with muscular legs emerging from a pulled-back cloth and a shock of short blonde hair that are painted as brightly as the baby Jesus. St. Francis stands behind the shepherd and Mary in a sackcloth tunic. St. Joseph, Christ's father, looking a bit like St. Jerome in a wide-brimmed hat, stands next to Francis. The figure of Joseph may be a portrait of the donor who commissioned the painting for the oratory. At the top left, an angel swiftly flies into the scene, as if he's falling, a common element in Caravaggio's work. The cupid-like figure points to heaven whilst holding a banner that reads, "Glory to God in the highest." The face of the angel looks to be that of Francesco Buneri, an artist who trained with Caravaggio, one of Caravaggio's lovers, whose likeness has appeared numerous times in the more famous artist's work. Most theories conclude that Caravaggio's nativity with St. Francis is still in Sicily somewhere. Numerous underworld figures through the decades have claimed knowledge of the painting's whereabouts, and even claimed responsibility for the theft. As recently as 2018, mafia informant Gaetano Grado told authorities the painting was cut up into pieces, then sold to an art dealer in Switzerland. Unfortunately, the art dealer can neither confirm nor deny this. He's dead. None of the leads have so far resulted in the artwork's recovery. Most fear the masterpiece has been destroyed, damaged irreparably, or eaten by rats. Giotto also painted the Francis Nativity scene centuries before Caravaggio. It's one of the fresco panels from the St. Francis Basilica in Assisi mentioned earlier. Giotto's depiction shows the carved Christ doll coming to life in Francis's arms, whilst the friars minor assembled around their leader marvel in open-mouthed wonder at the miracle. Have a look at both of these nativity paintings on the St. Podcast website. Giotto and Caravaggio's paintings offer different interpretations of the nativity story, as well as other details in Francis's written hagiographies, which also vary quite a bit. Joost doesn't view the often contradictory story elements as a problem.
But I think it shows something that artists can do like no others, and it's creating tradition of telling the life of saints that does not always go directly back to texts. It's almost about filling in the gaps, the things you don't find in these texts, creating a visual tradition that speaks to the hagiography, but not directly. It's not always something you can pinpoint in if you read Bonaventure's life of Francis or Thomas of Celano's life, but this is then Caravaggio's life of Francis.
Artists in the 1600s like Caravaggio changed St. Francis's story by creating a contemplative ascetic charged with symbolism. Gone was the radical friar who challenged convention and performed miracles and exorcisms. He was replaced by a devoted monk deep in meditation and prayer. The work in Room 1 by Spanish painter Francisco Zurbarán, who was named after St. Francis, is a perfect example of this intensely dark and atmospheric movement. A hermit-like figure dressed in burlap is alone in a dark cave. He holds in his hands a skull, a memento mori, which is a reminder of our mortality. The Zurbarán painting, as well as one by El Greco, featuring a surprising bright blue sky, and also a work by Murillo, are the template for the St. Francis we all know today. The iconic monk in a sackcloth habit, with a quiet strength and power. St. Francis might be a 13th century figure, but his teachings and legacy are still with us today. The exhibition at the National Gallery in London brings these topics and the man behind them into focus. Beyond Francis's very relevant exhortations to take care of the planet, confront materialism, and help those who are most vulnerable, is his wide-ranging effect on pop culture. Here's Joost one final time.
I think he's the archetypal saint. And even thinking about Francis and rewatching the Star Wars movies, I thought, oh, well, here's the Jedi dressed like St. Francis. It goes on and on.
It does indeed go on and on, in a galaxy not so far away. Thank you so much for listening to this special episode, The Art of St. Francis, an exploration of the life of St. Francis through artworks on show at the National Gallery in London's free exhibition, St. Francis of Assisi. The works of art discussed in this episode are only a small fraction of the artwork at the exhibition, so do check it out if you're in London or planning a trip. Special thanks to curator Joost Joustra for his time and insight into the exhibition. And thank you so very much, Alexandra Moskalenko, press and PR manager at the museum, for organizing everything and helping make this podcast episode happen. And finally, a big shout out to a former colleague in publishing, Chris Michaels, for putting me in touch with the right people to kick everything off. For images of the artworks, people, and topics mentioned in this episode, please have a look at the St. Podcast website at www.saintpodcast.com. The word saint is spelled out, S-A-I-N-T. Do also check out the National Gallery in London's website for additional info about the exhibition, which runs through July 2023. Follow the National Gallery on Twitter and Instagram at National Gallery. Thanks again for listening, and stay tuned for the next special episode, created to tie in with the Welcome Collection in London's exhibition, Milk. The Saint Podcast episode is called I Am Milk, an exploration of milk in Christian stories and art.